Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the UDRP Domain Name Lock Working Group meeting on the 28th of February 2013. On the call today, we have Michaela Nalen, Alan Greenberg, Helga DeFallo, Volker Kreiman, Laurie Anderson, Celia Lehman, Jonathan Tenenbaum, Gabriela Schlack, and Luke Slover has just joined the AC room. We have apologies from Lisa Guano, Faisal Shah, and Christine Durain. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Barry Cobb, Lars Hoffman, and myself, Natalie Turbin. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Michaela.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever. As per usual, if there's any changes to anybody's SOI, going once, going twice. Okay, fine, moving on. Right. So, we had some input from Luke and from... Was it Volker who provided something else?
Matt.
Okay, sorry. Just please bear with me, my voice is a bit screwed up this morning. So that has been reflected in the latest draft of the Straw Man, which is up on the Adobe. I can actually see things. As I said, I'm balancing a laptop on my knees, so I'm probably, if I make less than normal, this is part of the reason why, my excuse, and I will stick to it. Okay then, so Luke's additions, does anybody have any queries about those? Sorry, throat. Any feedback, any thoughts?
Michaela, this is Marika. Would it be helpful to just go through the changes, maybe, the main changes that were made to this version as it was just put out this morning?
Yeah, that might help. If you could just kind of point us in the general direction. As I said, I'm a little bit challenged here this morning, so I'm on a tiny laptop screen, like, which I can barely read.
That's okay. I'll just go through the document as now, and then we connect. And basically, this document covers the changes that I sent out earlier this week that reflect some of the feedback I received from colleagues, as well as the comments that were submitted late last night and earlier this morning from Luke as well as Matt. So on the first point you see there is basically in red, basically talking about a preliminary deficiency check. I've clarified the language a little bit there because I got some feedback that it was actually being confusing, and some people thought that we meant here the administrative compliance check that's conducted. So what I've done is actually add a footnote to clarify what was meant here, that is, it's more a quick check to make sure that there's not a bogus complaint, and that the UDRP provider can go ahead and actually ask for the verification from the registrar. I think Gabriela has her hand up, so maybe you could first go there, Michaela.
Gabriela, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Gabby, thank you. So my question would be if we need to also think about maybe a term for this deficiency check, or is there any, like, I couldn't find this in the Stroman, I'm not sure if this is relevant, but maybe the UDRP providers also need to set a term through these rules for doing this check. Thank you.
Does anybody have any reaction to that suggestion?
This is Marika. I didn't completely understand the question or the suggestion that Gabriela was making. Could you please say it again, Gabriela?
Yeah, my question would be when a complainant starts a complaint and submits a complaint to the UDRP, then there's no term. I mean, we are not saying here that the UDRP provider has like 1 day, 2 days, a month or a week to do this first check, even if it's something that in the practice now we know that they do very fast. But I'm not sure if we need to put some kind of also a term to this deficiency check that we have at the beginning? Thank you. If it's not clear, well, I'll write it down.
And this is Marika. I think it's a very good question, but as we don't have any of the UDRP providers on the call, maybe it's good indeed to put it in an email, and you know, they are maybe able to provide some more specific details. I don't know, for example, if this is something that they have defined in their respective rules, if this is the right term or whether they have a standard term that they use for that. So I think it may be a very good question to ask.
Okay. Well, I'll ask by email then.
Yeah, I would think unless there is a direct tie to the time we give a registrar to lock, then I would think that alone is out of scope unless it's directly linked to a locking time to a locking issue timing.
Isn't it related to the lock?
Well, I think it is, but all I'm saying is that alone is not something we should be tinkering with if. Unless it is needed to make sure that that there's sufficient time or not too much time associated with the locking process. I think the locking process goes on. I think the two are going on in parallel, so they may well be related. But
okay.
I'm a bit fuzzy at this point, but I think so.
Michele, I'm a bit confused. Well, not confused. It would help me to understand the issue. Is the current situation causing a problem with this deficiency check? Is there some problem with this that we need to address? Marika, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't think there's any issue with it. The main reason why we've included it here is, I think, to reassure people that UDRP providers, just any complaint they get, they automatically forward it to the registrar and have the name locked down. I think this is a kind of insurance where I think some people said, can the UDRP be abused? And if we create a very clear time frame, can people just go and just to have a name locked down or a possible reveal of information, even if it's not just for malicious reasons? So I think the reason why we've added this in here is, I think Christine has explained to us that what they normally do is when they get the complaint, they do quickly look to make sure that it's a valid complaint. It's not Mickey Mouse that's finding this, and it's obvious that there's never going to be any payment or any follow-up to the complaint. So if that's confusing, maybe, and if it's not indeed an official term, we can definitely consider taking it out. But I think it's the reason why it's mentioned here is more to provide this kind of reassurance that there is just a quick verification by the UDRP provider before they actually go and make this request to the registrar to verify the information and lock the domain.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Gabriela, since you raised this, and I'm not saying that you're raising it as there's any issue with this, I'm just trying to understand.
I will add something more. Maybe it's more clarifying. What I think is that before this, like the process today, UDRP providers, it's different because this commencement, we are changing it all over. We are doing things that now we are saying that the UDRP provider has to first tell the registrar to log, and then the respondent is going to be informed. So we are changing the whole starting process of the commencement of the case is going to be different now through these Truman changes, if this goes on, right, if this is approved. So, taking that in account, now this first point, UDRP complaint is filed with UDRP provider by the complainant in the Stroman, has this provision where, the second one, the one about the preliminary check. Now it's different. It's a different moment only between this UDRP provider and the registrar. So I was thinking about having a way of explaining or telling the complainant what is going on and that this is going to be different and how long he will have to wait until this commencement now is going to start. And part of this, of the time for the commencement will be, of course, this time since he submits the complaint and all these days until this preliminary check is done. Maybe it's only hours, but we don't know how much time will it take. So I want to clarify how much time a complainant has between his submit and the commencement of the case. I'm not sure if I'm being more confusing than clarifying. Sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry. It's okay. It's okay. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. As far as I understand, I don't think we're changing anything to the time of commencement or response times as are currently in the UDRP. I think the only thing where we're changing is the requirement of for the complainant to file the complaint at the same time with the UDRP provider as with the respondent. I think that's the only major change we're making. I think what we're actually doing here is just writing down what is happening in practice. And again, as far as I understand from what Christine has shared, and I think David as well, that this preliminary deficiency check is a matter of minutes or seconds. It's not a thing, a formal check that takes days, because I think it's in their interest to get the complaint as soon as possible to the registrar to make sure that it gets locked. So it's a more a kind of, you know, when you receive a letter, that you make sure that you don't throw it in the bin because it was advertising, but it's a real letter to you. I think it's more that kind of check that's done and then it's being forwarded to the registrar. So it's, as far as I understand, it's not adding any new requirements or any new steps. It's actually just explaining what is currently happening in practice. And I do see that Ty from WIPO has joined, so I would invite him to jump in if I'm saying anything here that is not according to what is happening today from the UDRP provider perspective.
Yes, hello, this is Ty from WIPO. I just wanted to say, thanks for summarizing that. That's exactly from our perspective what we anticipate as well. As you mentioned, when a case comes in, we do need to just ensure that it's prima facie valid, but it's in our best interest to move that along to the registrar as soon as possible.
So, Ty, just so, this is Michele speaking, just for my non-legal kind of simple brain, you just kind of look at it and make sure that it makes sense, that it's not complete and utter rubbish and total junk. That be the simple way of looking at it?
Well, pretty much, of course, from our perspective, this is Ty, I'm sorry. We want to make sure that, of course, that it's been filed under correct policy. We find that there may be people who are either, of course, is spamming us with advertisements or indeed that there may be confusion as to the utilization of the correct policy. So it's pretty much on its face whether it appears to be valid, and they make out the arguments under UDRP, and as Marika was stating, usually that would be something that could be done within the first few minutes. So we endeavor as a good provider to move that along as quick as possible.
Okay, thank you, Gabriella.
Okay. I think that maybe I have misread something about the timing from the commencement, from the submitting to commencement. I thought it was going to be longer with the Strawman, but maybe it's not. So I will read this again, and if I have any comments, I will send them to you.
Okay, thank you. So, Marika, moving on.
Yeah, this is Marika. So moving on then, you see then a footnote that I've added there to clarify that this is to apply once the accreditation program for privacy and proxy providers is in place. Then the second change there, and it's something I clarified in the email as well, I think we've been speaking about underlying registrant or the real registrant, but it's been pointed out to me that those are actually not correct terms, because under the RAA we do consider the proxy as the real registrant. So apparently a better term to use is either a proxy customer or a beneficial user. And I think I saw someone just suggest as well there's actually another term that's even used in the RAA, which is the customer of any privacy service or the licensee of any proxy service. So we probably have to pick one of those terms to really make sure that we are correct in our terminology. And then the next change, I think
okay,
this is just
a... Stop.
Yeah.
Slow down. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody there, now this terminology about the proxy, the privacy, the licensee, the beneficial user, all this, we have to make a couple of decisions here, if I understand this correctly. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. If there's a strong preference for either of those terms, I think I've now put the proxy customer or beneficial user, but if people feel strongly that it is better to use the language that's in the RAA, that's definitely up for discussion.
Okay, so does anybody else have any opinions or thoughts or any feelings about which terminology they would like to use, or are we happy to leave it with lots of slashes or whatever the hell you want to call them to be decided later? Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, unless I misunderstand the timing, we're likely to see some level of clarity once the new RAA is approved, or at least comes closer to being finalized. And presuming that's within the lifetime of this PDP, we have the opportunity to change the wording. So it may well be best at this point to use, you know, flexible terms or multiple ones with a slash, and then clean it towards the end once we understand more where the world is going.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Other than trying to define a new term which may stick out.
Okay. Volker, I'm going to pick on you because I know you're there and I know you're following the RAA thing quite closely. Is anything within the RAA changes likely to impact this terminology here or not?
Not really, no.
Okay.
There's still discussion about how WHOIS privacy services should be integrated into the new RAA, where ICANN has a wildly different position than the registrars, which might have an impact, but I hope we'll see a resolution within the next 2 or 3 weeks on that. So while we use terms, we do not use terms like underlying registrant or something like that, so I don't think there's much impact at this point, either way.
Okay, so choosing terminology here, which we don't need footnotes that go on for longer than the actual text to explain them, is probably what we should be looking at.
I think so, yes.
Because I would hate to see us produce any kind of report where the footnotes explaining the body of the text are longer than the actual text. That would seem to be a little bit strange. Ty,
would proxy customer then just be basically the simplest translation of what we're actually talking about? And then, you know, indeed, if there's an official term that comes out of the new RAA, we can still use that. But
okay, I'm happy with that, Marika. I just want to make sure that we. Excuse me, so we don't get ourselves too bogged down, but just keep it clear. Ty put something up there on the chat. One note we would like to make on draft recommendation 3, we would recommend the sentence, for the purpose of the UDRP, the registrant listed in the WHOIS record at the time of the lock will be recorded as the respondent, be changed to be, will be recorded as a respondent. Noting that respondent is defined in the rules as holder of a domain name registration against which a complaint is initiated. Ty, I'm sorry, but what's the difference between a respondent and the respondent? Because I don't actually understand.
Sure. This is Ty. We of course, I'm just carrying a bit of a message here for David on this, but to help explain this distinction is that when we get complaints, we see that the complainant may have made out in their complaints that there may be, for instance, a number of respondents that are named as there may be domain name holders under the UDRP as well. There's a bit of, precedent that you can point to that says that there's a consolidation of argument or complaints based on the fact that the domain name holder is, in fact, a separate entity that is, at that time, listed in the WHOIS based on a beneficial holder sort of basis. So it's not uncommon that there would be multiple respondents that could be named by the complainant, and so as to name just the respondent, as the registrant at the time the registrar comes back to confirm this is a bit limiting as it doesn't capture these other respondents' identities that are named in the complaint, either pursuant to a consolidation request as has been developed throughout the jurisprudence or just on the basis of the fact that at the time the complaint was filed or initiated, as it's stated here, this information is not per se consistent with what is confirmed by the registrar at that time when it comes back to us. So basically, to boil it down, it appears that there could be arguments that could legitimately be made by the complainant and its complaint that for our purposes we would necessarily want to pass on to the panel for its consideration on that issue.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense to my non-legal brain. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. If we're talking about the time at which the complaint first comes in and the provider is, doing their homework at that point, it is the respondent. That doesn't preclude others being added afterwards, but at that time, the respondent, slot is blank in the form, and you're filling in with the only answer you have, the entity that's listed and who is. So I think grammatically, the is the correct word to use at the time it's first put in.
So this is Ty. I understand I'm following the bit about the confirmation from the registrar as to the entity that appears in there. I'm just trying to square that with the arguments that we receive from complainants, especially when there's issue of false who is details, and in relation to some arguments we see where they make the fact that there is one overarching registrant behind these or entity behind these when they reference, for instance, commonality of use between multiple domain names featuring the same content on websites, these sorts of things. In regards to the named respondent as opposed to the registrant, it's not atypical for us to see that the complainant argue that this registrant is somebody that we name as the respondent as coming in with our complaint, but we note that based upon our communications with this individual, just as an example, we know that this individual has claimed that they are the owner, and so as to make their argument, they'll include these other respondents' details as people they name as the actual holder. And because of the language there is defined in the rules, we typically will allow that to go to the panel for them to make the consideration rather than us state that they need to amend their complaint to name the respondent as a particular entity on that basis. That's why the A versus the suggestion was put out there.
Yeah, it sounds to me, and again, I'm not the practitioner, but just from a language point of view, it sounds to me like what we should be putting is the respondent and then an S in brackets after respondent.
Okay, I think, guys, I think we should try to follow this through maybe on the list because
okay.
We could, no offense to the A and the V and to the article, the indefinite article, and I was the one who questioned it just to understand it, so it's partially, more than partially my own fault. But I think we should get bogged down on this a little bit. Matt, you had your hand up.
Take it down.
Okay. sorry. Laurie Anderson is typing because she's lost her voice, a bit like I have. She's saying, in the case of proxy privacy services, NAF allows the lifting of privacy at the time of verification, whereas WIPO, in their experience, adds the underlying registrant as a respondent in addition to the privacy service. So that's just a note on that. Thank you, Laurie. Um, Okay, then. Marika, moving forward.
Yeah, it is, Marika, and I just took note of Alan's suggestion, which seems to accommodate both views of adding the S, so I can add it in the next iteration of this draft, and people can then discuss further if they want. The first part of draft recommendation 3, I think that's just moving around of the sentence for clarity. There were no significant changes. I think we just added modify the status of the registration again as a clarifying language. No big change there. Here again, there was the sentence read: these changes must be prevented from the date of receipt of a request for verification. That's how it originally read. And I've added in there within 2 business days to make sure that it aligns with our previous recommendations that changes need to be prevented within 2 business days, because otherwise we're saying, on the one hand, changes need to be prevented from the moment that the request for verification is received, and in another recommendation we're actually saying that a registrar has 2 days to make sure that those changes are prevented. So just to make sure that that's aligned. The next one here, I think as well, the red line is just a clarification, has been submitted by the complainant to the UDRP provider, just to make sure that that's clear. Then the next sentence here in red, as I clarified there, this is actually just a moving of the section from draft recommendation 2 to number 3, as it seemed to flow better there and clearer how the process would work. Then the next changes are also clarifying. The first ones are clarifying language. This, we had their relationship before, and that didn't really make much sense to some, so I changed it to as a result of privacy proxy services. Then I added there in accordance with draft recommendation number 2 to make sure that there are specific requirements related to this for the reveal, as we outlined in recommendation number 2. Again, I've updated the language there to change the underlying registrant to, well, I will change it now to the proxy customer, I think, as we agreed. Then in draft recommendation number 4 and the box on the left, this is an update. I think we forgot here to update the 1 business day to 2 business days, so that has been updated here to align it with recommendation number 2. Then going further down, draft recommendation number 7, again a couple of minor edits just to clarify or make the language more precise. And again, of course, if anyone has any issues with these additions or changes, people should just speak up and let me know. Then recommendation number 10. So the first change I made there is that basically we didn't add a scenario in which possible settlement could also have as an outcome that the registration remains with the respondent. So I added that option as one of the potential outcomes of the settlement. But then the comment that Luke made is that, and it's something we discussed on the previous calls as well, that the way that the recommendation is currently written, it puts the registrar in the position of having to confirm with the complainant as well as the respondent what the details of the settlement are, and making sure that the necessary confirmations are received. And well, Luke is on the call, so I'll let him speak to that. But in order to address that, my suggestion would be to take out the sentence that's currently in red brackets that reads, the registrar is required to confirm with the complainant as well as the respondent the details of the settlement, but possibly leave the other parts of the recommendations as they do explain what happens. I think especially the first sentence may be helpful there, because I think this as well, I think some of you remarked that it would be really helpful if UDRP providers indeed include the expected duration of the suspension in there. And the last part basically explains as well what is expected to happen once confirmation has been received on what needs to happen with the domain name registration. So with that, I don't know if Luke wants to say anything more or people want to discuss how to address his comments.
Yeah, thanks, Marika. Luke, are you going to, anything you want to add?
The more I'm thinking about it, the more I think we should simply remove the whole recommendation or not support it, to just leave the possibility to have the proceedings suspended, but do not involve any party in the settlement part. And if a settlement is reached, then the party or the complainant terminate the proceedings and have the settlement being enforced between them, and the respondent.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any thoughts on this? Mas, go ahead.
Sure. The benefit, or sometimes I've found the benefit of having the suspension and the transfer happening during suspension is that if the proceeding is withdrawn, sometimes notwithstanding the settlement agreement, it's kind of takes the impetus to act away, and it takes quite a while to actually implement the agreed upon settlement because there's no proceeding hanging over the parties where. If you're trying to get a transfer done while the proceeding is suspended, sometimes that actually makes it happen. Whereas if it doesn't happen, then you have a contract remedy, but maybe you don't, you want to go to court over this, you have to refile EDRP. It can be a pain to deal with if the one party backtracks on their commitments. But if everything happens during suspension, you don't have that risk.
Okay, thank you. Volker, you had your hand up, but it seems to you dropped it again. Do you?
Yeah, I'm mulling my response a bit more.
Okay. I'll mentally put you as up after Ty, then. Ty, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Ty. I just wanted to add not the comment so much on the substance there, but just from our experience, just to note that we see between 20 and 25% of our cases go settled prior to a panel rendering a decision. So we do see this quite a bit. We don't take active part in the settlement negotiations between the parties, but we've been acting on the basis of the suspension mechanism that we've had since 2000, and so I just want to present that as just something that it's a very common thing that we see on our end. Just to add that to the discussion.
Okay, thank you, Volker. Have you managed to mull your thoughts over enough?
Yes, basically I agree with what Lucas said. The registrar is the main point of contact for the registrant, whereas the provider is the main point of contact with the complainant in most cases. Whereas the provider is an arbitrator and deals with arbitration all the time, the registrar is usually a business unit or an entrepreneur and not a court or an arbitrator and not usually qualified to make a decision about a settlement. So the question of whether a settlement has been reached, I see more in the realm of the provider than the realm of the registrar, actually.
Okay, thank you. Marika, and then I don't know if that's an old hand or not for Ty. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't think it's necessarily within our remit to determine who should be responsible for assessing whether a settlement has been reached or not, because I think that doesn't specifically relate to the locking. For the reason, I think we do need to include something, as this is if you see in the blue box, this is, I don't know if it's from the UDRP or the UDRP rules, but there is specific mention there on if a settlement has been reached, that the lock must be removed within 2 business days. So I think for completeness of the process, we probably do need to say something about it. But I agree and I understand that there's conflicting views on who should be responsible for that assessment. And again, I don't know how that's currently being done in process, but it's currently being done by the parties involved. But I don't think we necessarily need to aim to resolve that here, as it's not specifically in our scope, I think, to address that specific question. So again, a suggestion would be to possibly just leave the first sentence to explain that indeed UDRP providers are expected to notify the registrar that a suspension is in place and expected duration, and then maybe just remove all the rest of it and just refer to the language that's currently in the blue box that says, should the both parties come to a settlement during the course of proceeding, then the registrar must remove any lock preventing transfer or cancellation within 2 business days of confirmation of a settlement by the both parties. and basically leave in the middle then how that is done and basically follow what is currently being done, I presume. Would that be a way of addressing the concerns but still making sure that we do have in here the complete process of what is required or what the requirements are under the current rules and policy?
I'm just looking at the chat there, and I'm just going to put my hand up as well just to make sure that it was captured. There's some interesting backwards and forwards here amongst some of the people. Luke is asking whether WIPO be ready to take over this part and gather the confirmation from both parties and assessing the settlement terms, and then just give the directions to the registrar. So tell the registrar, this is what you need to do. And Matt is basically asking, would that be better? Would that be preferable for registrars? Laurie, I think they've had good results during suspension by getting permission from both parties. And Volker has a query as well, which is actually a valid one. Enable a transfer instead of transfer, because obviously it's impossible for a registrar to unilaterally transfer a domain to another registrar, technically speaking. Marika, you have your hand up again still.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to know that, indeed, I have made that specific suggestion in one of the previous versions of this document, indeed asking the question, you know, would the UDRP provider be in position to confirm the settlement? And I think it was Christine at the time that responded that actually currently NAF just gets the notice from the parties involved that they want a suspension, and I believe she basically said that usually means they get it for a certain time, and if they don't come back, they just assume that a settlement has been reached, and when they do come back to resume the proceedings, that's when they're contacted. But they're not necessarily, at least in the current model, involved in receiving a copy of the decision. At least that's what I understood or recall from her conversation or her feedback then. And I think Ty is basically, saying something similar, that it's not necessarily within in their purview. So maybe this is actually a separate issue that, you know, we can definitely, I think, highlight maybe in the report, but maybe this is something that would need to be considered as part of the broader review of the UDRP and how to deal with that. As again, I don't think this is something that specifically deals with the locking as such, and maybe would involve some broader discussions and considerations.
Okay, thanks, Marika. There's a lot of chatter here, actually, on the Adobe chat, which I think is going to be quite interesting to look at. Because Laurie can't speak, so she's vocalizing herself that way. Celia, go ahead.
Just one question for Laurie. So in practice, does the provider then confirm that that the agreement is made? Do they do that? So when does that happen usually? I'll just I'll wait a response over the chat. What I was asking is, so in practice, the provider does confirm that an agreement has been reached.
This is Ty. Just to respond, generally speaking, what we see is that we'll get a communication either from the respondent or registrant themselves stating that they want to suspend the proceedings, or they're not interested in the domain name, or that they want to engage the complainant in some way, or the complainant may come to us and say that the respondent or the registrant has indicated their willingness to enter into a settlement agreement, and based upon a request from the complainant or from the parties jointly, they request a suspension in order to engage in settlement negotiations. This happens outside of our interaction. We state when we suspend the proceedings that during a suspension, the domain name pursuant to an agreement between the parties may be transferred from the complainant to the respondent to the complainant only. And it is also the case where if there's no agreement that is reached, it is typical that the complainant will ask for reinstitution of these proceedings. But typically speaking, from our perspective, what we see is typically the request for suspension and then either notification that this was successful and then therefore it would be a withdrawal or a termination request or a request to reinstitute. These are our normal contact points in this procedure.
Volker, go ahead. I think Michael is just running through his door. Someone's knocking on it.
Okay. I would agree to that assessment. In the vast majority of cases where we have a suspension and that I see, the complainant only requests the termination of the proceedings once he has firm control of the domain name, i.e. if the domain name is in a user account and has his Whois data updated, and obviously that cannot be done if the lock is still in place. So we would need a step in between the termination of the proceedings and the implementation of the settlement, which is usually the removal of the lock and the push of the transfer to an account of the complainant when the complainant, which is the majority of the cases, receives the domain name. So basically, having a notice from the provider in place where he says you can remove the lock and do this, this, and that because the settlement proceedings that says that would be great help for the registrars.
Thanks, Volker. Sorry, I had to step away because housekeeping wanted to come into my room at 7:30 in the morning for some bizarre reason. Anybody have any reaction to Volker? Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. I'm just wondering whether this is maybe one of the items where, you know, at this stage maybe difficult to come to resolution, but maybe it's one of the items we highlight in our report as requesting further input on, or one of the items we identify as one of the open questions that we want to discuss further and would appreciate community input on to see whether it's something we should be addressing here, and if so, because I see it, or at least the feedback I see, there are two approaches. The one way is saying the ERP provider should be responsible for confirming with the registrar what the settlement is, or it's the registrar who would do that confirmation with the parties. So maybe, as you know, it is a big question, and as said, I'm not necessarily sure whether it's within our remit, as it does address a very specific detail of the UDRP and not necessarily under the locking question. Maybe that's a way of dealing with it, just highlighting it as an open issue and then seeing the feedback that is received to determine how we deal with it in the second part of this PDP.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Mass?
I just wanted to check and see if something like the timeline that I posted to the chat board is something that Volker thought was workable and something that maybe the providers were comfortable with, or I guess maybe Ty can speak to whether that would be comfortable for them as well. Give the provider a little bit more insight into what's going on so they know whether a settlement is complete and what's supposed to be happening before they give up jurisdiction over it.
Okay, so Ty and then Volker.
Sure, this is Ty again. Thank you, Matt. As I was saying in the chat, I don't know if I would be at a point now to actually give any opinion on this topic. The one number in your chat item, number 4, about the issuing the order is something that we'd have to consider to see if that is something that we are in a position to do. Haven't really worked this through all the way, obviously. So I think that there may be some aspects of this procedure that just need to be looked at a bit more. And I'm sorry, I can't give any further clarification as to whether it would be proper for us or not at this time. I just can't.
Okay, I think, guys, we could go round and round quite a bit with this. So maybe it would be best if we push this in as something, we need to put it in something we can't quite decide on. I mean, maybe if Matt wants to put something further for further discussion, and if the UDRP providers could revert on this as well, to think about it a little bit further and see, you know, how you view these things. I mean, it's obviously asking you off the cuff now what you think could be a problem. I'm just quite wary of the time. Volker, I'll give you a word, and then we go to Marika.
Yeah, my word is, in the chat, Matt has made a proposal which looks workable to me. The only suggestion for change I would make is number 6, where he says parties confirm change is complete. Actually, it would only require the complainant to confirm that the change is complete, in my view, because the complainant controls the proceedings and cannot at any point request a termination.
Thank you. And Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. As we're heading towards the top of the hour, I just wanted to share with you what, from my perspective, should be the next steps now in dealing with this, because I think we've concluded, I think, most of the items in the straw man. There might still be minor issues, and I think there's some items that may be further discussed on the list. And I think there's not any problem with that. But the idea would be that, after this meeting, I make the changes as we discussed today, and then actually start moving this into the initial report, so that the next meeting we can actually start looking at the initial report as a whole, which also still may include, some tweaking and changes to the recommendations. But I'm hoping that we're nearing a stage where, we're almost there, that we don't have to do any more major tweaks or changes. But I think, as I said, there's still some items that, if we can start discussing those on the list, they can then be made as part of, if their agreement is reached, they can then be made as changes as part of the initial report itself. So that would at least be my proposal on how to proceed. So we're no longer looking at two separate documents, but this actually becomes an integral part of the initial report, and we can start focusing as well on getting that in the right shape and ready for publication by the 15th at the latest.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Volker, is that a new hand?
No, that's the all famous vestigial hand, sorry.
Thank you. And I think you set yourself the personal challenge to use that word today in a sentence. Congratulations, you won. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. So basically, Marika's going to make a few more tweaks to this, and if there's any further kind of comments and stuff like that, so that we're moving towards having this initial report out in time within the deadlines. Marika, if you've your hand up again.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just realized that in all the chat, I lost that, but Gabrielle actually said that she had a further comment to recommendation 5 once we had gone through all the other changes, so I don't know if that's still a point you would like to make, or whether it has already been addressed.
Thank you, Marika. This is Gabriela. Well, I will ask a question about can I read recommendation 5 first? It's if the complainant per step 4, the UDRP provider shall forward the complaint to the registrar and respondent, and notify the registrar and the respondent of commencement of the administrative proceedings within 3 calendar days. My question would be, can we put here notify the parties and the registrar, not only the respondent, of commencement? Which is obvious, but it's not there.
Anybody? Okay, so Matt's putting on the chat, good point. The complainant would also want to know about commencement. I assume that's in reaction to this, or am I being stupid? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. This language, I think, is actually from either the policy or the rules, and I don't know if that's maybe already mentioned somewhere else, and I'm hoping that as he's typing. Exactly. I think he's already putting something in there. It may already be covered somehow.
Yeah, I know it's in the rules, and that I was comparing the rules with this, which is why I'm asking the question, because in the rules it says that both parties will be informed of commencement.
So you basically think that we should call that out in the draft recommendations, not necessarily in the blue box?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
So you're basically saying that we should call that out in one of the draft recommendations and refer to the relevant paragraph to make sure that it's clear that that needs to happen as well. Do I understand you correctly?
Yeah. Because in general, when you read the strawman, if you put yourself in the shoes of the complainant, it seems the complainant is not informed of many of the steps. But maybe it's obvious because we have the rules. But comparing the two documents, maybe it's better to clarify this.
Okay, Ty has provided the link or the paragraph in which that's covered, so I can add that in the next version to make sure that that's clear.
Thank you.
Okay. Celia, go ahead.
Yeah, Cecilia, just one more question also for the sake of clarification. I was wondering if we could also add a footnote somewhere that, the business days as per the policy are the business days as observed in the location of the registrar.
Okay. Is that clear, Marika?
Yeah, just Marika, shouldn't that be the business days for the party that's required to do the action? Because I think in certain cases we also say that the UDFP provider has to do something in a certain number of business days. I was under the impression or had the understanding that the business days refer to the party that was required to do something. So in their business days, they would need to do that. But I agree. I think that should be clarified what we mean there. So if that was not the understanding and it's only the business days of the registrars, it would be helpful if you tell me that that is the case, and I can write a footnote to that end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Cecilia, can you follow up on that?
Thank you. That's perfect. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. All right, then. So keep an eye on the mailing list. If there are any specific issues you want to address, do so via the mailing list so we can move forward with this. And we'll speak again next week at the same time. So we're done. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Michaela. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanya. You may now stop the recording.